This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another Arc Build Week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a party with a purpose or an evening of dramatic stage performances, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Essence Magazine executives are in town as the countdown to the Party with a Purpose, the 23rd annual Essence Festival, kicks off later this month. Lauren Williams is Essence Magazine's features editor. She joins us. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Essence Fest has been going strong in New Orleans for over two decades now. It began in the mid-1990s as a celebration of the magazine's 25th anniversary, a magazine focusing on the African-American community, specifically women. Did you ever think that a women's magazine would have such a big draw in the city, a draw that's kept this festival going over two decades?
I think it makes perfect sense. The difference between Essence and any other entity that might come to New Orleans to put on a festival or put on a show is that we really do want to invest in the people here. It's not like we're just coming to reap the benefits of an amazing city and then just leave. There's a real emphasis on investing in the people of New Orleans, and I think that has kept people coming back and really seeing the benefit of having this here and hosting it. And there's also a huge economic empowerment portion. Last year, we helped to bring in $250 million to the city over the course of 3 days. And I think that's also really powerful.
Now, it's expanded beyond the city of New Orleans all the way over to South Africa.
Absolutely. We just had our first Durban Festival last November, I want to say. It was a lot about investing in the business owners in Durban, a lot of independent, small entrepreneurs who got so much exposure by being aligned with the Essence brand, highlighting young, up-and-coming Durban artists and really celebrating that culture. So, yeah, we were having a global moment.
Music is such a big part of this celebration. What's new this year? Who are the headliners?
So our big headliner on the first day opening is Diana Ross. I think she's going to be electric.
If you need me, call me. No matter where you are, no matter how far.
She is paired up with John Legend, who also is amazing. We have our first ever ladies' night. We'll have Mary J. Blige, Jill Scott, Chaka Khan, and just a celebration of women.
Are you ready for your blessing? Are you ready?
And then we have Chance the Rapper, who's having an amazing moment right now, young guy out of Chicago, as well as Master P and the No Limit reunion. Solange will be there. Also, Trombone Shorty, D1, and Escape is going to be performing together for the first time in years. I think it's going to be really awesome.
In addition to this musical party, Essence Festival is billed as having a purpose to the party. What exactly is the purpose?
So the purpose is to really speak to the other parts of Black people's lives that we're constantly thinking about. I think the empowerment experience speaks to that most specifically. That's our series of heavy-hitting speakers who just come and, you know, share their insights with the audience. We have Reverend Al Sharpton, who will be talking about the current political climate, along with Maxine Waters, who definitely, since this presidency, has had a resurgence of voicing her opinions and really fighting to be the voice of her constituents. Ian LaVanzant, another crowd favorite. We have Ava DuVernay coming to talk about how activism informs her film work. So that's just a really great place for our festival goers to be able to liaise with people that they might not have ever had a chance to be in the same room with before. And they're talking about things like access to healthcare, education, politics, economics, and all that jazz. And so we really want to be a forum for that in addition to the music.
You also have some young new voices.
Yes, I'm also very excited about Tamika Mallory. She is one of the women who helped form the Women's March after Trump's election.
Now, the empowerment experience, this is what goes on in the Morial Convention Center?
Right. There's a million things going on, but for the most part, the empowerment experience is in a huge room. But, you know, for the big acts, they really, really fill up fast.
There is something this year called the Woke Gallery. What is that?
It's actually The Woke Wonderland, and it's a companion piece to The Empowerment Experience. And basically what we're doing is putting power back into the reader's hands. And we're saying, these are the issues that we're talking about. These are the things that affect our lives. How can you be involved? And that's, you know, one component of being woke. It's more than being aware about the issues. It's saying that you're going to actually do something. So what we're doing is, it's a social media campaign, and we are encouraging readers to take photos, make pledges about what they're going to do to impact social change in their neighborhoods. So in the convention center, we'll have all these sort of activations. So you'll see Woke Wonderland logos, and you'll want to maybe take a Snapchat or take a Twitter photo and share that among your friends.
What is the best way to experience Essence Festival?
I think it's best to download the Essence Festival app, because it's very helpful in helping you organize your days. Because honestly, if you try to do everything, you will be completely lost and you'll miss out. But just come in with a plan, you know, have fun and, you know, figure out what concerts you want to see, what speakers you want to see. Just enjoy the city.
Essence Magazine features editor Lauren Williams, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Diane.
I said upside down, you turn me, and you'll give me love instinctively.
The 23rd annual Essence Festival runs June 30th to July 2nd with activities in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome and Morial Convention Center. More info is online at EssenceFestival.com. Uptown Southern Rep Theater brings to the stage A Fight for Freedom with Pulitzer Prize and Tony Award winner Susan Laurie Parks' Civil War drama, Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3. It's a story of a slave who fights on the Confederate side of the war. Joining me is director Valerie Curtis Newton, actor Sam Malone, and Southern Rep's artistic director Amy Hayes. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
How did you come to choose this work about a slave who fights on the wrong side of the war, Amy?
Well, we had not done any of Susan Laurie's work, and I think she's one of the most dynamic, refreshing, modern voices out there right now. I chose this play in 2015 to have a conversation about the Civil War from the point of view of an enslaved person who does go to war, who does come home, who does discover, you know, what is it like to have freedom and what is it like to not have freedom and what do those ideas mean. It seemed really important to our heritage and culture to have that point of view, especially in a play that I think does it with incredible humor and incredible insight and an ensemble cast that gives you opportunities for a really dynamic night of theater.
What was the playwright's inspiration for this work?
This is Valerie. Susan Laurie's dad was in the military, and she began with the idea that she wanted to write about what it's like when your father goes to war, what it's like for him there, and then what it's like for the family and community on his return.
Why is it called Father Comes Home from the Wars with an S?
Yes. I have my theory on it. The first part of it is that she's really not trying to make this a realistic period piece that lives in one time. But in fact, that's why in the play there are contemporary idioms and time is sort of all mushed together. So I think that that's the idea, that there have been men who have fought in wars over the history of this country, have asked the same questions that Hero asks. World War I, black soldiers had this thought that if they went and fought for the U.S., that they would come back and it would make them equal in the country. And that didn't happen. And then the soldiers in World War II had the same idea that it would kill segregation if they went and proved themselves valiant on the battlefield. So I think that she's writing about that. And I think it's also about the war's inside Hero. He has to make the choice to go. He has an opportunity in part two to decide whether to continue or to change his course. And he has an opportunity in the third part to make another choice. And so his warring self in making the choice in each one of these parts, I think, is another reason why it's wars and not war.
Now, what's the storyline? Sam, you are the major character here. You play the slave named Hero.
Yes, I play Hero, who later becomes Ulysses. At the beginning of the play, I'm given an opportunity to fight for the Confederacy, for my freedom. So to participate in the very institution that is enslaving me, I get a chance to fight for that institution in order to gain my freedom. So, spoiler alert, there's a decision made at the end of the first part, and I find myself in the wilderness in the second part, and we explore what freedom is, and we talk about worth and value. How do you put a price on that? Then the third part, you know, we're exploring the changes that happens, the changes that occur within that person and also within the community once they return. It's a different place.
All the questions about freedom are really important. And then the final question, actually, will you recognize freedom when you have it? And who will you be when you're free? The answers to that question, I think, are really, really something for all of us to ponder.
Was it difficult for you to get into character?
This character is a representation of real people. So the only difference between me and them is time.
Valerie?
We've worked really hard at setting tone. You know that the play does have this humor, but there's this darkness underneath. The truth of the history is not bright. And so this is part of Susan Lorrie's genius. She's been able to create these moments that are quite funny in the kind of absurdist way, funny. And then she turns them immediately into things that are resonating as supremely relevant today. So finding that right line. And then I think that for most of us, there was trying to figure out how not to be angry in telling the history of enslaved Africans. It sets off something in us, and to find the way to be sly like the fox in how we tell the story rather than sort of bullying our way in and sort of trashing the place. We really wanted to find the nuance and use the words and the intelligence of the words to swing the emotions of the audience back and forth.
The play is set in Texas?
It's set in West Texas in 1862. Essentially, it uses the historical fact that the Emancipation Proclamation was signed in 1863, but the word didn't reach West Texas until 1865. We, as an African-American community, celebrate a holiday called Juneteenth, which is actually when the people farthest out west got word that, in fact, they were free. And that event actually is one of the moments near the end of the play, the presentation of the Emancipation Proclamation.
In the end, will audiences view our country's complicated past and the cost of freedom in a new light?
I think so. It argues two sort of perennial points of view about freedom that resonate in the African-American community. There's the one rebel revolutionary that is snatch your freedom by any means necessary, take it. And then there's the other that says, I've invested in this Constitution and in this country, and I want to have it recognized through those means. And that argument about from the inside or from the outside that we're still having is a part of what the play is espousing. And I think that that's part of the question that the audience should be leaving with. What does our resistance look like? What does our fight for freedom look like in 2017 and beyond?
Director Valerie Curtis Newton, actor Sam Malone, and Southern Rep Artistic Director Amy Hayes. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Southern Rep Theater presents Father Comes Home from the Wars, Parts 1, 2, and 3 by Susan Lorrie Parks, with performances running through June 25th in Marquette Theater at Loyola University. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival's 24th season is up and running at Tulane, with the Bard's Taming of the Shrew. A diverse group of local actors is bringing the comedy-turned-heartbreaker to the stage. Joining me is director Emily Whalen, with actors Devin Tyler and Andrew Fott. Welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So let's begin with the title, The Taming of the Shrew. What's a shrew?
Devin, do you want to try that?
So in this case, a shrew is someone who's just very, very rowdy and someone who is very hard to get along with, someone who is known for being a bit disagreeable.
Also, a woman who is definitely existing in a man's world. When the show starts, her father is trying to find a husband for her, and her father's very wealthy. So she comes with a lot of money. So something about transactional love is going through the theme. So while she's rowdy and she's feisty, she's also has a lot of men speaking for her all the time.
Now, the main characters are Katerina and Petruchio. And Devin, you play Katerina, mm-hmm. the shrew.
Yes, it's a fantastic experience.
Especially in 2017.
Especially in 2017. There's a lot of this that still lives today. As a woman, I can definitely connect with Katerina on a lot of different levels.
And you say there's a lot of this. What is this?
When we speak about the place that women hold in society today, when we just talk about being a woman in society, this play makes a lot of commentary on that. And so being able to do that in 2017 is always rewarding and always something that I can learn from.
And Andrew, you are Petruchio.
Yes, I am.
Tell me about your character.
I guess he's a rogue in those classical senses where he's a little bit of a wild man. And it becomes apparent pretty early in the play that if they're going to try and get Katerina married off, they need to find somebody as wild as she is. And so in many ways, he is that person. He's also desperately in need of money because he's been slightly irresponsible with the inheritance his father has left him.
And your main objective in the play is to tame Katerina?
He wants to marry her. But after he marries her, that's still the problem of living together for all of eternity. And so they have to have some kind of an understanding.
There's this great quote in the play of two raging fires that meet. And definitely Petruchio and Katerina, there is some sort of destiny around these two because neither of them, in a way, can be tamed. We got really interested in this book called H is for Hawk that was all about falcon training. And there's a lot of language throughout the play that Petruchio uses that's about how to tame Katerina, almost like how you tame a hawk, which I imagine in Shakespeare's time, falconry was a really big thing. But I think in 2017, as we approached it, it was hard to do just the sort of love story version because the play results in a very long, like page and a half long monologue at the end of the play of Katerina speaking of duty to her husband. And as we all sat around on the first read of the play, we thought, oh boy, how do we do this in 2017?
So how does the story unfold and how do you present this centuries-old work?
Well, there's a prologue that rarely gets done, and we're doing the prologue. And in the prologue, in a sort of trading places kind of way, a very wealthy lord comes upon a very poor drunk man passed out on the top of a heath and says to the huntsman around the lord, what if I was to dress up this drunkard as if he was rich and told him that everything he thinks he is not true, that he's actually something else? And the huntsmen go, no, that's crazy. And the lord says, no, I think it can work. And then the next scene in the prologue, they've done it, and a bunch of players enter the space and say, we're here to bring you a play. And the drunkard said, oh, is it a comedy? Is it a Christmas pageant? And they say, no, it's a kind of history play. And that's actually the Taming of the Shrew, as most of us traditionally know it. It's a play within the play. So in our production, Devin, who's playing Katerina, plays that lord. And Andy, who's playing Petruchio, plays that drunkard, which allows us to sort of set it up as a bit of a trick.
This production toured prior to its opening on the main stage at Tulane's Lupin Theater. Mm-hmm. To underserved areas of the community. Where did you tour and how was it received?
So we opened the show in front of 90 men at Bridge House. It was amazing. We walked into a cafeteria and all the men very quickly sided with Katerina. And we're very quick to, I can't describe it, it's something that you feel in the audience and where the laughter goes and where the attention goes and very loud call and response, which was amazing. But they wanted to protect Katerina. We took it a few days later to about 80 women at Grace House. We were also in their cafeteria. It was an extraordinary performance, also very vocal. The women seemed very connected with Petruchio. I don't know what that is about, but interesting. They seemed to be laughing with Petruchio all the way closer to the end in a way that the men had kind of figured what Petruchio was about a little earlier on. And then we did it at Treme Community Center. And then we took it to Dixon Correctional Institute.
I think it's really interesting to go to those performances at Bridge House or Grace House or DCI because it's a wonderful chemistry of neither the actors nor the audience really knowing what's going to happen when that show starts. And there's both an amazing amount of fear and an amazing amount of trust that develops from that moment. And so you do forge this really intimate connection with an audience very quickly.
What is it that keeps these centuries-old works current for modern audiences?
Shakespeare just does it so right. There's universal themes. When you talk about a Shakespeare play and you're essentializing it, it often comes down to themes like power or crisis of faith, grief, ecstasy, or themes that we just all share in a human experience. I think there's also something to the way Shakespeare structurally writes. It's inherently democratic. In Taming of the Shrew, there's 9 characters who actually all get some pretty equal stage time.
One thing that's really exciting about this production is the way that we're performing it, since it is in the round and it is stripped of all set. It's very similar to how it was actually performed back in the 1600s, which was on a thrust stage with nothing on stage. And, you know, Shakespeare puts so many clues in his script about where you are, what you're wearing, what's happening, that it actually, when stripped away and when just allowed to function as the language, it actually stimulates the imagination in ways that a lot of work doesn't.
There's also something with that stripped away set, and in the round, the bodies are the show in the center of the space. And you're watching the bodies and the relationship and then audience behind them. You're looking at a mirror of yourself on the other side. It makes for a kind of three-dimensional performance style to come out too, because it's not presentational anymore. It's bodies just truly in space. Mm-hmm. Your back is always to somebody, and your back is always a part of the acting. It's very alive.
It's harder to lie in the round. It's harder to do a lot in the round, because when you are surrounded by people, it's just much easier and simpler and clearer when you just tell the truth. And so we're just focused on making sure that we're connected and always telling the truth. It could be very presentational, and it could be very pomp and circumstance, but also we could just be talking to one another and connecting with the audience around us and just having this ongoing relationship within a relationship. And by the end of it, everyone in the room is connected. It's beautiful.
Actors Devin Tyler, Andrew Vaught, and director Emily Whalen. Thanks.
Thank you.
The New Orleans Shakespeare Festival presents The Taming of the Shrew. Performances run through June 18th in Tulane University's Lupin Theater. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.